Charleston, please make some noise for Josh Johnson!
I was talking to one of my friends, and he said that he knew, the first time he knew his, like, neighborhood was broke was when the bank closed. It's a pretty good indicator. The bank holds that branch's money, and that branch is falling off. And said he went to the bank. And, you know, he basically just straight up asked the teller, he's like, hey, do you know why this branch is closing? And she was like, are you here to make a deposit or a withdrawal? And he was like, withdrawal. And she was like, yeah, that's why. That's it in a nutshell. That's exactly what's happening. You do enough of that, and then there is no bank. We're just kind of a building with a little bit of parking. I don't know. I look back at the ups and downs I've had in my life. I've been like broke off and on my entire life, you know? And there's a weird solace sometimes in being broke at the right time. Everyone thinks that the security is in having means and having money, but sometimes not being a part of the circus is its own solace in a weird way. You know that it's bad when you're really shopping at the dollar store. There are things anybody could use at the dollar store. You need a fly swatter, you might as well run up in the dollar store. You know what I mean? You need like a dustpan, might as well run up in the dollar store. But if you're really shopping at the dollar store, things are not great. You know, I would go in the dollar store for stuff you shouldn't even be buying from the dollar store. They sell it, but even the cashier look at you like, you sure? I'm talking about when you have to get your meat at the dollar store. I knew I was in a bad situation when I went to a dollar store and was looking at that meat in the fridge, and I was like, because the meat at the dollar store, they don't go into specifics. You go to Kroger, Walmart, you go to Target, you go to any of these places, and you'll see the brand of the meat, and then you'll see, you know, all of the little no preservatives ever, completely organic, you know, all the stuff. When you go to the dollar store and you buy your meat, it just says the price, and it says meat. And you're like, maybe if I don't ask any questions, it can be whatever I think it is. Because then, I also got a lot of stuff at the dollar store, even as a kid, that I look back and I'm like, that probably wasn't the best. Like a good example, if you know, you know. When you shop at the dollar store, especially if you ever got toys at the dollar store, you know the dollar store toys are in a very specific, slightly copyright infringed arena of toy. You know, like you would have a G.I. Joe, but it doesn't say G.I. Joe. It just says soldier. And you buy the soldier, and it even got the setup like a G.I. Joe, like it stands like a G.I. Joe, but the legs a little too short. So some very long arms. I couldn't tell if the arms were long or the legs were short. And it doesn't have like grip action. It says that on the front, grip action. It just has a hole. They didn't make a hand. They made a hole stub. And then this hole stub is what you go ahead and put the little toy gun through. But then they didn't really measure out the gun versus the hand. And so the gun is not in proportion at all. So it looked like this would blow his arm off if he tried to shoot it. But you bring it home and you're playing with it. And you're like, yeah, soldier, get him. And he's like, I'm going to get him. Oh, I'm going to get him. They getting it right now. Trust me. Trust me. Nah, they getting it. Look. Point me over here. No, it was terrible. It was very bad. It was horrible. No, you would have you know, those dollar store crayons. That's another one. It's a very specific type of drawing as a kid, because those dollar store crayons, they melt in your hand. So you got to be quick with it. You got some imagination. It needs to come out now. Don't. You got to put those crayons in the fridge. I remember being around some of these Crayola crayon kids being like, your crayon's stale as hell. Man, y'all don't even freshen up your crayons. That's crazy. That's why your picture stink. You know what I mean? My picture smell like leftovers. I remember one of my favorite toys from the dollar store was like a, it was like a Stretch Armstrong, right? But it was Stretch Armstrong. It would only stretch for like 3 days. You only got three good days. After that, it would get hard. And if you tried to stretch it after it got hard, it would cut your finger open. I don't know what it was made of, but it was the most malleable, unmalleable thing. It was Play-Doh and adamantium together. No, it was crazy. And that's the thing too, is when you're growing up in this situation, for anyone who knows what I'm talking about from experience, then you also know that it's very hard to know that you're broke, especially if you're a kid. It's hard to know if you are surrounded by love. My family loved me so much, so, so much. They still do. I make it sound like that's, make it sound like there was a falling out. They still love me. But no, I was surrounded by love. I had my grandparents and my mom and my dad's love. I had my aunt and my uncle's love. I had my cousin's love. I had so much love around me. And when you're surrounded by that much love, you don't know that you don't have money when you have that much love until you meet somebody who has both. That is a curious experience. Like when you're like, oh, you got both parents and a pool? Okay, I think there can be upgrades to life. I see that now. To me, greed is a paradox, because you want everything. Even if you have more than enough, even if you have so much that what you have is starting to hurt you in the long run. You see it with the way that hedge funds cannibalize whole companies. It's like, okay, everybody made some short-term profit, but now this thing that people used to love doesn't exist. You know? Like, you take like a Southwest. You know, Southwest, people used to love Southwest. Bags fly free. Affordable tickets. You just sit wherever. You don't have to wait for the person. Southwest used to be so fire, because then you don't have to wait for the person to get to their seat, and you don't have to get up for anybody. Do you know what it's like to just be in your seat on the plane? And it's almost, everyone's almost here. There's a couple of stragglers. There's almost nobody coming down that aisle anymore. You even settle in. You're like, oh, I may not have a seat next to me. This may be the promised land. You get so comfortable, you're like, man, I might put my other leg over here. Southwest had a brilliant idea. And the bags were flying for free, which makes sense. The bags don't know where they're going. Why should I have to pay for this bag to have an experience too? And then greed, and then private equity, and then hedge funds, and then, you know, shareholder meetings, and then dividends. All the things start to creep in, and it's like, ah, maybe we'll stop doing everything that is why everyone likes us. Maybe we'll just be like the other airlines. They make money. But then you actually look at the people who fly Southwest, and they were like, oh, y'all, y'all aren't nice enough to be like them, though. Like, that's... Your seat doesn't even go back like that. Why would I pay for everything here that I pay for over there? That's crazy. And so then you see people plummet, because they're making decisions based on money, but not money that they need, just more money that they might be able to get. You know? And there's only so much that a business can grow. I understand a startup's passion, and that passion makes sense because the company just started. But after a while, it's like, do you really need to own everything? If the answer is yes, it's like, And they don't say it to us. They say it to each other. You ever get a hold of a recording of a closed door meeting and the way they talk about their own customers? You know, that's why greed is like a paradox to me. You're so greedy that then you end up cannibalizing your own company, your own efforts, yourself. You end up hurting yourself. American greed is another paradox, because as much as we know that the millionaires and billionaires maybe got their money in a way that's a little nasty, we also kind of want to be them a little bit. Everybody wants their peace, but we know how bad it is, you know? There are people who I know who want to be billionaires. They aspire to be billionaires. But if you ask them to name like a good billionaire, it's a hard quiz. But they want to be the billionaire because they're like, no, I will be different. How? You know? That to me is like a drug dealer saying, no, I'm gonna be different. Oh, how so? Oh, I'll only like sell drugs to bad people. How will you know that they're bad people? You know, word will get around and they'll buy my drugs and I'll be like, that's a bad guy. No, it's not going to be different just because it's you. That's the trick as well. No, it's different when I do it. It's different when it's me. It's different when it's for me. It's different when it's for my family. Right? So then you hear people talk about recession, that recession is coming, recession is looming. And to be fair, people have said that since the last recession. Every year, I'm not an economist, but every year there's somebody that's like, it's coming. Get ready, batten down the hatches. And so you're in this situation where, you know, people are very worried, and understandably so, because it's not really about the money. Money is mostly like the conduit. Money's mostly the placeholder. There are people who find money to be a game, and for them, the number is the important thing. How much actual money they can stack and hoard is the real thing. I want to show how rich I am is the real thing. But for almost everybody else, it's about their survival. It's about taking care of yourself. It's about taking care of the people that you love. So when they hear that there's going to be a recession, they're not really thinking like, oh, the number will go down. They're thinking about food. They're thinking about housing. They're thinking about resources. You know, and the only way forward is with other people. We've proven that this thing doesn't work. And by this thing, I'm not just talking about like one specific system. I'm not talking about like capitalism. I'm not talking about anything like that. I'm talking about we've proven that a true rat race does not work. I can't believe the world watched Squid Game and was like, yeah, I think I could win the pot. The pot is the problem. You know? And then I think the other problem is that if you are pitted against people, if you're pitted against the other 330 so million Americans, then yeah, the odds look insurmountable. But when you see how many people are actually in your situation, and you see how many millions of people are just like you, and you put yourself on the same side as them, all of a sudden, all of the weight, it gets a little bit easier. You know, There are people around the world that will never have access to the things that we have access to that make it work. And so sometimes we stress, oh, how am I going to make it work? And it's like the number one way is through community. Your future is your neighbor. There's no other way forward. And I know that that can be scary. That's an idea where you have to lay down so much trust at the feet of people that you don't know. That's very scary because I've had good neighbors and I've had bad neighbors. I've had very bad neighbors. I had a neighbor who stole my trash can. It's the trash can. You could have just put your trash in there too. Stole my trash can and live next to me. Like I'm not gonna notice my trash can. And he was big too, and I'm pretty sure he sold drugs, so I wasn't gonna take my trash can back. But I was like, I will put my trash in my trash can over here though. Just because you stole the trash can doesn't mean I'm gonna get another trash can. It's a trash can, and trash goes in. You could have put your trash over here, but then you wanted to put it in front of your yard. Okay, fine, whatever. I'm sure you have a gun, so I won't make a big deal of it. But I've had bad neighbors, and I've also had incredibly kind, incredibly sweet neighbors. I had neighbors that made any transition period I've been having in my life easier. I remember when I moved to Chicago and I was living in my first apartment, I had a neighbor that knocked on my door. I had been living there for like 2 days, and I didn't have stuff. I'm like this broke kid who just moved to Chicago with like two suitcases of like clothes and a couple of other things. And so knocks on my door and it's like, hey, this older guy. And he's like, hey, I saw that you moved in. If you need anything or you have any questions about the building, just hit me up. I live right there. And I'm thinking he's like the building manager or something. So I'm like, oh yeah, what's your name? And we get to talking a little bit. And as we're talking, I realize he doesn't work for the building at all. This dude is literally just checking on me for the sake of checking on me. And he's like, if you need anything, because I saw, you know, you were having a little trouble, I couldn't have caught up to you, but I was going to help you up and everything. And I was like, oh, thank you, man. And we didn't see each other often. And I remember the day that I moved out because I ran into him again. I ran into him and his wife. And he was like, man, I'm sorry to see you go. Because I can tell, just we never really got to chop it up or anything, but I could tell that I like the way you move. And you know, you didn't cause any trouble. You were just cool. And I wish I would have knocked on your door a couple more times, right? I never forgot about that guy. Because even knowing that there was someone there if I was having a problem, it just made living there on my own a little bit easier. Just in the back of my head. Once again, we didn't even have that many interactions. I only knocked on his door a couple times. And the couple of times I knocked on his door, he needed help too. There was one time where we had in our building a chute for the laundry that nobody used. Nobody ever used it because it's not like it was one person. Do you know what I mean? Like, the chute for, this isn't Eloise. Like, it's weird that there was a chute for the laundry because it just went to the floor down there and you'd have to go down there to wash your own clothes anyway. So I guess if you wanted to save yourself the weight of the trip, you could push all the clothes down and let them get nice and nasty and then slip through the chute and then hit the ground and now it's got different stuff on it than the reason that you're washing it. So nobody used it. And nobody used it because it was nasty. And so then one day, the actual building manager poured a whole bunch of, like bug poison down it to try to, like, kill some of the bugs that had been living in there. And the bugs were like, you know what? I think we'll go everywhere else. And so then one day I came home and my apartment was just overrun with bugs and it didn't make sense because I didn't even have stuff. I had a fork, a bowl, like it was kind of like a saucer. It wasn't a plate. It was a plate that you would put a teacup on. I didn't even have dishes to be nasty enough to have all these bugs. So I'm freaking out. I'm killing a bunch of bugs. And then I run over and I knock on his door. And when I open his door, he looks like me. He's like, you too? And both of us just knowing that we're both dealing with bugs was enough to make the whole thing easier. He helped me kill some of my bugs. I helped him kill some of his bugs. And we were both very upset with the building manager. I had another neighbor when I was living this like short little bit in this, I don't even know how to describe it. It was like, it was a house. It was a house. But it was like, you know how there's a, it wasn't a duplex. Okay. The house I was living in was like perfectly split in two, right? To make two unlivable houses. Okay. So I wasn't staying there for long, but it was just two completely unlivable houses, right? And I had a neighbor that lived next to me where I moved in. And once again, this older lady, so sweet, sweet as could be, knocks on my door. And it's like, hey, I saw that you just moved in. I wanted to. She had baked something, like old school, like out of the movies. She had baked something. She was like, I made you a little something, some muffins. I know moving is hard. I know sometimes you don't have anything to eat right after you move. So this is for you, right? And I was like, oh, I didn't even know what to do. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And she was like, yeah, you know, I like to help people get their bearings. And just so you know, just so I just want to be the one to tell you so you don't have to find out on your own, there's a crackhead in the wall. And when you get that type of warning, it does make you look at the muffins twice. One has nothing to do with the other. But I was still like, oh. And she was like, yeah, we thought it was a bird for a long time. And then he started talking. And so if you hear anything in the middle of the night, just pound on the wall a couple times and he'll stop. I was like, okay. All right. Okay. And I closed the door and I sat in silence for the rest of the night, waiting to hear a noise that would never come. It wasn't until like months later I heard some scratching in the wall and I was like, how does somebody just live with it? Like, and so I went, I knocked on her door, and she came to the door. She was like, you hear him too. And I was like, look, I know you lived here longer than me, but in case it is a bird, maybe we should call animal control. Just throwing it out there, right? And she's like, you can do what you want. I called animal control, and then they could hear the scratching too. And then they went ahead and went on the roof, and they said that they found a slight hole in the roof, and turns out it was a bird. It had been a bird the entire time, and I'm pretty sure it was a bird when she heard it, but maybe she just had the TV on. Maybe she was like, he's talking. Animal control leaves with the bird. I go over, I tell her it was a bird. Animal control called the bird. And she was like, thank you so much. Seriously, thank you so much. That has been happening for like 8 months, off and on. And I was positive it was a crackhead. And, you know, I guess that's what a good neighbor does. You know, I guess a good neighbor lets you know nobody's in your wall. Because I think fundamentally the toughest thing people are facing right now is like a true a true way forward where they can trust other people to help them and take care of them. And I can't tell you to just blindly put your faith in people that you don't know, even if they live next to you. But what I can tell you is that most people return energy. Most people give like for like. So if there's a community that you want around you, all you have to do is be its founder. If you are the one knocking on your neighbor's door, letting them know you're here, if they need anything, they'll probably do the same for you. And it's so simple to build community. It's so much more likely that you're going to build community than you're going to become a billionaire. Do you know what I mean? Like, both things are incredibly hard to do. They take a lot of hard work and everything, and one of them means everyone will hate you. You know, because when you're broke as well, the thing that happens, I think, the most often is that we have a real misunderstanding of each other. The rich people that I've met in my life, no rich person I know feels rich. They feel comfortable. Now, they'll do whatever it takes to maintain their level of comfort, but they don't feel rich. They're like, no, I'm just comfortable. I'm just chilling. And you show them how much they make, and they're like, yeah, I got to maintain, you know, I got kids, I got to. And then you show them how much the rest of the world makes, and they're like, ooh. Okay, maybe we don't tell anybody how much I make. And the same thing, when you're broke, there's a genuine misunderstanding around the decisions that people make when they're poor, around the way that people think, because there's not the possibility of thinking past tomorrow, because you're not even sure you're gonna get there. Do you know what I mean? When you really don't have means, when you really don't have money, you come off wild sometimes because all your requests are strange, because you're just trying to piece things together just so you can make it to the next day. You know? Like, a good example is, I used to work at a grocery store, and one time in the break room, we're eating our lunch, and this one dude opened his lunch and then just said out loud to everybody, hey, I made a hamburger at home, but oof, does anybody have a top bun? Sir. They're always sold even. How did this happen? We look at money as paper, right? At least when it's in its physical form, it's this paper thing. But it's more than paper. There's fabric weaved into it. There's linen, there's cotton. It works the same way that society works. There's fabric that weaves all of us together. And there are people who have not been able to participate in the opportunities of making money or making their well-being out of these chances in the market the way that other people have. And so when you tell them that a recession is coming, they're like, oh, a what? Okay. I was already broke. Do you know what I mean? What is a recession to somebody who was on the street the whole time? I guess the best example I can give is one time I was at a party with my friends and I fell in the pool. And falling in the pool at a party is one of the more embarrassing things you can do when it's not a pool party. If you fall in the pool at a party where people are just sort of standing around the pool and talking, you might as well have fallen off the roof. But I fell into the pool at the party, which is not just embarrassing, it's not just annoying because out now all my clothes are wet and everything. It's terrifying because I can't swim. You know what I mean? I'm not a swimmer in the way that I would like to be. And the way that I would like to be is to be able to survive. And so when it comes to swimming, I'm not only not a fan, I'm not efficient. And so I get in the water, and when you don't swim, and I don't just mean can't swim, I'm saying when you don't swim, like for fun or anything, being surrounded by water out of nowhere is very concerning. I didn't realize I had stepped into the pool until I was in the pool. So now I feel like, what I feel like has happened is that I turned around and water surrounded me. And so I start doing what I think swimming is innately. I start fighting the water, right? I'm punching and I'm kicking and I'm like, get off me, water. But I'm in the water. But I'm like, get back. I don't want you over here. And that's not how water works. And so I'm sifting through the water and it's almost like swimming, except I'm staying in place underneath it. So that is drowning. That's what drowning is. When you're swimming perfectly, but you're not going up above and you can't get your head up, you're not actually swimming. You're drowning and it's also exhausting. You're fighting and you're punching, you're kicking and you're moving and you're doing a pretty good job of drowning. If you could get your head above water, this would be swimming. And if you could get your chest up, if you could do that butterfly thing, now you're a swimmer. But I am over here, no more water. Get out of my face, right? So then it takes someone pulling me out of the water for me not to actually drown. And not right after, not soon enough after, but pretty soon after, we leave the party. And not as soon as you would like if you almost drowned. You know what I mean? Like, that's... And it's tough, too, because, like, the dude saved you as your ride, so... Now he's doing you two favors, you know? So then, you know, man saves me, and my buddy pulls me out of the water, and now, you know, we stay an extra 20 minutes because now he's got his Mac points for saving a life in front of everybody. That's what most embarrassing. The only thing more embarrassing than like showing a whole party full of people you can't swim is to be sitting there wet while the person that saved you tries to mac on somebody. Just like, yeah, you know, I try to help out the people, you know, and it doing my best. And it's like, also, my man didn't. Look, I'm not necessarily trying to give notes on being saved, but like, my man did jump in the pool and grab me and lift me up and swim me to the shore of the edge of the pool, right? This man just stuck his arm in and kept clawing at me until he got the back of my shirt. That's barely saving. Like, when I tell you that I'm over here, stop it, water, no, I don't want any more. And then he is over here, bow, bow. And he missed like 8 times. So he was punching me in the head while trying to save my life. And he finally hooks his hand behind my collar and pulls me up the way that a cat sort of lifts its kitten in its mouth. You know what I mean? Just sloppy. And then I'm also still fighting. I don't know what's pulling me up, so I don't know if that's more drowning. I don't know what the effects of drowning feel like. So now I'm not necessarily fighting his hand, but I am still fighting the water. And so if you were on the other side of the pool, it does look like I was drowning. He reached in, dunked me one more time just to be safe, and then pulled me up. Because I don't know that he's trying to help me, but when he finally pulls me up and I'm over here coughing up the water and everything, this man helps me get up out of the pool and then immediately sees the eyes on him and everything, sees the opportunity, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know. I do what I can. Also, I know he saved my life and everything, but also the fact that he didn't need to roll his sleeves up like that. Like, that was even more just worthless. Oh, yeah, you know, I tried. Now you sitting here wet, just like, can you wrap it up? Get the number or don't. And so then me, him, and some other friends head to his car once he's ready to leave, and his car won't start. Waited for nothing. Now, luckily, we were staying at his house, and luckily, he did live close enough to the party that we could walk. It was like maybe, I don't know, like a mile and some change. It wasn't crazy. And so we start walking. As we start walking, it starts drizzling. And then it's drizzling a little bit more, drizzling a little bit harder, and then it really starts raining. And when it starts raining, all my friends did a different thing when it was raining. Like, I had one friend that did the turtle. He's walking and just trying to... And I get it, because he has some deep collarbones. He would have had two lakes on either side of his neck if he had just let the water hit. That would have been two puddles he had to carry. So I understand him trying to... Then I had another friend who was over here doing this, which genuinely pissed me off. That's one of the craziest things I've seen. You, you have two hands, one hand covering some of your head, but not even efficiently. Where's the distance management here? You'd be better putting the hand on your head. Then I had another friend who just decided to lean forward, because I guess he just doesn't want a wet front. He's just cool with it all hitting the back. And as it's raining and raining, my friend was over here doing this, turns to me, because I'm just walking. I'm not doing any of this. I'm just walking normal. And they're like, oh, Josh, you must not mind the rain. And I was like, I almost drowned 20 minutes ago. And that's what it's like when you're broke. You're almost drowning all the time. So when people try to scare you with talks of a recession, you're like, why would I? What? You're doing this. I'm already wet. And the way to ensure that you're going to be okay, the way to ensure that your family is going to be okay, is by creating chains, by linking up together with other people, with other families. Because the way forward, your future, I guarantee you, it's not in the market. There's a belief that, like, if I can just get enough ahead, maybe I'll pull some other people with me. And that sort of thinking is the reason that we as the people can be taken advantage of so easily when it comes to money. It's like, I can get you a little bit ahead. Oh, I'd like to be a little bit ahead, right? But the way forward, your future, I promise you it's in your neighbor. I promise you, there's no one that's going to take care of you like the people that are actually next to you. And it's kind of daunting to me. It does freak me out a little bit that there are so many people, every election, every year, no matter who's president, that expect the person in office to make them rich. Don't you know this is America? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just not how it works. It's not how it's ever worked. You may like the person in office, you may not, but I guarantee you they're not going to make you rich. That's not how anything works. And don't get me wrong, I've had dreams before. I had a hard time getting to know people, and I had a hard time communicating with people. I'm an only child, and my mom wanted me to have friends so I wouldn't be crazy. And so, as a single parent with one kid, my mom, the only thing she knew how to do was go ahead and take me over to her other single parents' friends' houses where they had one kid, and she was like, maybe y'all will just play and not be crazy together. And sure enough, there was a time in my life where my parents got back together, and so we were a two-income household, so I started to get the good toys, right? The real good toys. I'm talking WCW, NWO, wrestling toys, Sting, Goldberg, Kevin Nash. And sure enough, you know, I remember I got those toys. Those are some of my favorite toys in the world because I didn't know ankles had come out yet. I would hold up my Kevin Nash and I'd be like, bow, 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 bow. Look what he does. Bow, 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 bow. He had knees, he had ankles, he could do this. That's crazy. I was used to this, this only, this only. Maybe if you were getting fancy, some of this, but I wasn't used to this. This thing right here, this is crazy. Real shoulder movement? My mind was blown. It's like, look at what this thing can do. Bow, 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 right? And so then my mom took me over to her friend's house, and her friend had a kid, and I went ahead and brought over two of my toys. I brought my Kevin Nash and I brought my Sting because I'm trying to make a good impression. And so we're talking, they're talking, and finally we go to his room to play, and my mom leaves to go run some errands or something. And I quickly realized after my mom left that he was crazy. He was genuinely crazy because all of his toys, every single one of his toys, didn't have a face. None of his toys had faces. I don't know if he was chewing them or if he was burning them, but they were gone. And so he looked at my Sting toy and he was like, oh, we have the same one. And I was like, I don't see how that's possible. I don't see how that's possible. And then sure enough, this kid pulls out his Sting toy, and I know we have the same toy because the Sting had the jacket. The jacket you could put on, you could take off and everything. And so we're playing, and I'm trying to be a collaborative new friend, right? I'm like, what do you want to do? You want to do Legos? You want to do, like, wrestlers, whatever? And then we decide Legos. So I was like, do you want to build a castle? You want to build a wall? What do you want to do? So we decide to build a castle, right? And then this kid, we're halfway through the castle, maybe 100 pieces to go. And this kid grabs the castle, lifts it up, throws it against the wall. It explodes into like 190,000 pieces. And I'm like, what did you do that for? And he goes, don't talk to me. And I was like, oh, man. Yeah, chill, Satan. Chill, okay? Back up, devil, okay? Because I had been prepared in case the situation happened, because I knew I wasn't a crazy only child, but I knew there were other crazy only children out there. So I already had my thing on me, right? I had that lance in my back pocket. I was like, don't you come near me. I will cut you open. This thing is 6 weeks old.